Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. It is the 9th of July. The sun is now up and the tomb is empty. And we start our each hour of our show that way, just as a reminder that in the shifting sands of life and as circumstances do change around us day in and day out, there is one truth that is rock solid, and that is our Savior lives. And because Jesus does live, there is always hope and always future, regardless of what's happening day to day. This is Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Peter Kapsner, joined by Logan Rausch on sound and board, as well as Paul Perreault in the newsroom. And we've been following, of course, like I think many of us have been following, the story of the boys in Thailand trapped in the cave. And we actually have had breaking news happen throughout the course of this morning. And Paul, we'll come over to you. What's the latest on the story?
The latest is two more boys, a total of seven, have now been rescued from the cave. They are working quick this morning because they stopped last night. They had four taken care of yesterday and then three more already today, which is great news.
It is great news. And even Ruth Kramer last hour was suggesting there was a little break in the weather, right?
Yeah.
In terms of that they're worried about the rains flooding this cave, but they've gotten a little favorable weather situation.
Yes. Yeah, so again, keep in prayer regarding the weather situation for the workers, for the boys. Just keep this whole thing bathed in prayer. It was amazing hearing her story about one of those boys who is a Compassion Child from Compassion International. So it's like, wow. So many connections. Please keep in prayer.
Yeah, it really does matter to just stay. When we feel disempowered, I think, being a world away, there still are things that connect us globally as brothers and sisters in Christ. And Logan, you were just talking about just the treacherous difficulty of how you would feel claustrophobic-wise, having to deal with oxygen tanks, getting through very small spaces. It's a harrowing experience.
I've visited what's known as Carlsbad Caverns in New Mexico, and they're gorgeous, but they're huge, and that's the point of it. But there are portions that they're neck tight. I mean, you have to turn sideways and wiggle through, and most people, they say, just don't go in there. It's just not a good idea. We've blocked it off. And so just the idea of being miles into one of these tiny little slide-in caves, I can't imagine it.
Yeah, and you know, there's another story that caught my attention this morning that had to do with an oxygen mask, and that was the headline, is that JetBlue, the airlines, saved a French bulldog with an oxygen mask. Apparently, this bulldog was under distress sometime during the flight, started having breathing problems, started the tongue, the name of the bulldog is Darcy, and the tongue started turning blue, and the JetBlue crew members came and provided oxygen and really helped Darcy out. You may not like claustrophobia, you know, small spaces. I hate flying. So this was a hopeful story.
Well, I mean, yes, it's so far coming good news all morning when dogs and boys being rescued. But it doesn't help that the French bulldog's entire face is smushed in. Its nose, it's hard for it to breathe normally. I mean, you look at all the different kinds of bulldogs. You think big, burly. The French bulldog has a lot of disadvantages going for it already.
I was super curious. I have no idea the difference between an American or a French or a Spanish bulldog. So these are the things we can help you sort out here on Faith Radio Mornings, the important headlines of the day. We'll take a break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Andreas and Margaret Kostenberger. They are both theologians, and they're going to talk with us about the importance of developing character in our children and parenting versus just all the success and the pursuit of a resume that we often get caught up with. So they'll be great. We'll also ask them what their favorite game is to play as theologians. So we'll come back in just a minute with Andreas and Margaret Kostenberger. It is 9 minutes past the hour here on the 9th of July, and we are joined in the line, separate lines actually, by Andreas and Margaret Kostenberger. Both of them are instructors, professors in theological schools. Andreas has worked extensively in New Testament and biblical theology. Margaret teaches subjects in women's studies at Southeast Baptist Seminary. And so I'm curious, Andreas and Margaret, we were talking about family game night in the first hour a little bit. When you guys wake up in the morning with all of the theology in your background, do you sort of play some Greek version of Scrabble and just get into the biblical words, or how does this go for the two of you?
Well, it's busy, as you can imagine, with four children. So But we do like to have game night once in a while. Funny you would mention Scrabble, because I do like Scrabble, because obviously it's built a vocabulary, so it's educational, and our children, fortunately, are interested in words. And so that's one example, Marnie.
Yeah. Another game we like to play as a family is Catchphrase, just because that's just really quick, and you get to know people's personality, then people learn to communicate. You know, well, after a while, you have to be quick on your feet.
That's great. Well, thanks for joining us again this morning. You were on a few weeks ago, and I was really intrigued as you talked a bit about the importance of developing character in our children. It's not the top of the mind question that I think a lot of parents have. We're just trying to get our kids maybe in school or figure out that situation, get them into activities and programs, and maybe start building their experiences and resume. That's a different conversation than building character. And so, Margaret, I know you guys have a lot of material on biblicalfoundations.org. It's great stuff to read. But Margaret, speak to us just again about the importance of what it means to develop character in our children.
Well, I think that developing character should be one of the priorities that we have for our children, even though there's temptations to go the other way in terms of skills and achievements. So character is hard to build, and it is hard to measure. It's a lot easier to measure winning on a sports team or getting good grades or some other sort of, you know, trophies or gold or those kind of things. But it doesn't always seem to get you ahead in life, having character. So sometimes maybe even cheating is the way to, you know, get yourself into positions of influence. But so our culture doesn't always reward scrupulous honesty. So, and it's not popular among peers either. So because the world prizes success and popularity over character, that's just a, you know, a beginning kind of part to our conversation here.
And Andreas, there's such pressure on young parents, just parents in general, to get the kids ahead on some level. And how can you sort of hold back that tide as a parent with your kids and really focus on something different?
You know, it has to really start with a conviction in the parent and a commitment, and it's ultimately a faith decision that you trust God, that, you know, if you focus on character, then he will be able to still allow your child to get a, you know, go to a decent college if that's his will, and that they will still, you know, have a good experience playing sports. Speaking for myself, it's certainly something that I had to realize, you know, as a parent. I grew up more with this achievement mentality and, you know, my parents bragging about my good grades to, you know, our relatives and so forth. And so when we had children, I gradually realized that I'd begun falling into the same kind of trap, you know, that I was pleased when my kids, you know, were successful in school and in sports. And at some point I realized that, you know, what am I doing here? You know, down the road, they're going to maybe be successful, but it's going to be hollow unless their character is such to get along with other people. They are honest. They have integrity. They trust God when they face adversity rather than, you know, getting mad or losing their temper. And then again, I realized, well, I need to start with myself. I need to model, you know, Christ-like character and integrity to my children.
And I would love for either one of you to comment on just how difficult that, what you're describing can be and how countercultural it is. Have you found help in the journey along the way, being in relationship with other people with similar kinds of values, just to kind of hold the space together as opposed to trying to forge out into the unknown alone?
Yeah, definitely. If, you know, you can walk alongside other families who have similar goals to you, then you have role models and encouragement, and you have friendships for the children in which they can take pleasure in doing these things together, for sure.
And in an article on biblicalfoundations.org, you mentioned some specific character dimensions for our kids, and the humility and diligence and discernment were three. I'd be curious, just starting with discernment, what do you mean by developing discernment for our kids? What does that look like, and what is that character quality?
Discernment is something we consider to be a primary character trait in which to help a child develop in, you know, basically the ability to make good decisions, skills in making good decisions in every area of life. And like we said before, discernment is not developed in an instant. It's something that is developed over time alongside the child's relationship with God and their desire to please the Lord and live for the Lord. But as a parent, successive interactions and instructions over decisions that are made as a child goes through things in their life really is a long-term process.
And Andreas, maybe you can speak to this too about discernment. Yeah. Is in the midst of all of the voices that are crashing into our day through our phones and just, you know, really hundreds of voices with these kids, how do we help our kids discern those voices that matter and those voices to which they should attend?
Absolutely. And, you know, our book is called Equipping for Life. And so as we thought as parents, what should be our goal? And I think discernment and good decision-making skills rose to the very top of that. Certainly instruction in what Scripture teaches, especially Book of Proverbs, is excellent. We want them to not just basically live our lives vicariously through our children, but equip them to make good decisions themselves. So that would be, you know, choosing good friends, just discussing with them, you know, the influence others might have of them for good or for bad, engaging them, especially in the teenage years.
Yeah, we have a little kind of process we take our kids through or try to do this as they are receptive to us. And we ask them several series of questions. One of them is, why do I want to do this as they're going through something in their lives? In other words, what are my motives or what are your motives? What are we trying to achieve here? So asking this question can be really helpful because it reveals if we have improper motives or at least mixed motives. The second question we ask is, what will happen if I do this? Mm. And it might seem obvious, but if you think it through, sometimes the child isn't aware of where they're going. We don't always think ahead. And then thirdly, what are my alternatives? So this calls for maybe the tried and true pro and con list, help the child develop this kind of thinking in their own lives, even writing it down on a piece of paper. What are the pros and cons of a contemplated course of action? Often weighing the advantages and the disadvantages help our children realize what will be the best decision. And then, like you were alluding to before, what do people I trust recommend? So turning to those who we value their opinion. Ask them, you know, what their input would be. Asking these kind of questions before deciding can help our children anticipate negative consequences, weigh alternatives, and seek the counsel of others.
It's such important advice for even just navigating all the social media conversations in terms of stepping back and what impact might this have in the decision-making and discernment. So let's talk a little bit more about social media and parenting when we come back from break here. So we'll take a short time out, but how important it is and what you've seen with your own children in terms of their use or lack thereof of social media. It's Andreas and Margaret Kostenberger talking with us about parenting here on Faith Radio Mornings. It is 20 minutes past the hour, and we are joined on the line by Andreas and Margaret Kostenberger talking about parenting. And they have a book available titled Equipping for Life, A Guide for New, Aspiring, and Struggling Parents. Highly recommend getting this book as it gets into the importance of building character in our kids versus always trying to build their resumes. And you also, if I remember correctly, you have some courses available online, do you not?
Yes, there's a course on the Gospel Coalition website, thegospelcoalition.org /courses, and then you can look for parenting, or you can also access it through our website, biblicalfoundations.org, and just search for parenting. That's a free course with lots of audio, video, excerpts from our book, and the discussion questions for small groups. So I think it's ideal for young couples, especially premarital counseling and so forth.
Yeah, it's incredible, especially as we live sort of in a generation where some young people are looking to maybe model a different way forward in their marriages, but it's hard. And so appreciate your voice into this. And I'm curious, we have 5 kids at home. I know you mentioned that you have 4. How have you handled the social media phenomenon over these last 10 years? I've seen massive shifts in my young people in university, but how are you navigating this idea with your own kids?
Yeah, social media is a very difficult thing to handle, I think. Life has changed since the advent of social media. And I like a lot of what life was before social media, and I like to encourage that in our family. So the dynamics of family life to not be centered around social media, but to be centered around living. And I like to encourage my kids to be outdoors, playing in the dirt and, you know, creating, you know, outdoor activities and those kind of things as a positive, you know, alternative to what most of the other people are doing. So I would say maybe delay the involvement of social media for kids to a little bit later. If you've already engaged in social media and your kids are pretty young, I try to put limits on it and provide opportunities for outdoor and other creative type of activities, maybe even homemaking activities in the home and, you know, sewing and other things that might be considered old-fashioned or really creative things.
Yeah, and it's hard, right? I mean, as parents, I think we feel hassled and stressed and busy. What are some steps for the busy parents who may be tempted to just put a device in front of their 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 year old to just get a screen, just to get some space? What advice do you have to sort of stay the course as a young parent who may be tired and just looking for a break?
Yeah, it's true. That's part of responsible parenting, isn't it? To equip our children first before we arm them with potentially hazardous devices such as smartphones or, other gadgets. So I think as a dad, I'm concerned that my children have self-control to start with a certain amount and then to even guide them. Once I do give him a smartphone, like our son who recently turned 16, we entrusted a smartphone to him, but we are still engaged with him. There's certain restrictions. We monitor his, you know, app downloads and so forth. And so that's part of what we talk in the book about, you know, relational parenting, that we don't just abandon our children or neglect them. We actually accept responsibility for them. Especially during those critical teenage years where it's so easy for them, you know, without maybe even looking for it, they may see a bad picture or they may just come across something on the internet. And before you know it, you know, they're trapped and maybe then they don't want to talk to you about it. And so it's really important for us to keep the lines of communications open and to keep them accountable and, to tell them even if they mess up, that's not the last, you know, straw. There's redemption in Christ. There's forgiveness. And so as parents, we're not perfect ourselves, right? We've made mistakes. And so hopefully we can just work with them and come alongside them and guide them. There's some positive things. We understand, you know, that they need to be connected with their friends, with at school. And so we don't necessarily want to create social misfits. We just want them to have wisdom and self-control in the way they handle technology.
And Margaret, we just have about a minute left or so. When that does happen, Andreas, as you have pointed out, where there's maybe a breach of trust or something happens with a smartphone with our kids that was not part of the guidelines and boundaries, Margaret, how do you walk through that where you don't set up this antagonistic relationship? I think a lot of parents are dealing with sort of this tension back and forth. And so how do you walk alongside of your teens? Any quick tips for that?
Yeah, I think that's really hard, actually, because at first, my goal is just to create an environment where they are protected. And so where they obey, you know, the parental guidance and instruction. And I struggle with that a little bit. I think I just want them to do the right thing for their own sake, for their own benefit. But if I think what is best is when the child believes that you have their best in mind, when the relationship is solid and good, and they know that these boundaries are for God's glory and for their flourishing. And so just to develop that relationship, I think, and when the breach occurs, to just talk to them about the reason why we have these boundaries and engage them on that more than the actual breach. Help them to sense their own, you know, weakness there and help them to desire a change.
It's Margaret and Andreas Kostenberger and a book that they've written called Equipping for Life, A Guide for New, Aspiring, and Struggling Parents, available on Amazon, all the usual channels. And tell us, just before we go again, where we can find your free resources for parenting.
Yeah, it's on the Gospel Coalition website, thegospelcoalition.org/courses, and then go to parenting.
Really appreciate you joining us here on Faith Radio Mornings in the midst of all the difficulty of raising our children today. Just have a voice of sanity and some wisdom in that. So have a great rest of your morning, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Peter.
We'll take a short break for a Breakpoint here and some news and come back with the second half of our hour and Dr. David Aikman and Foreign Affairs. So stay with us on Faith Radio Mornings. You know, Logan, I appreciate that conversation with the Kostenbergers, just having him on and talking just peacefully in an encouraging way about parenting, because it's tricky. I don't know anybody out there that just will say about their parenting, man, I've got this dialed in. Everything is working exactly like I planned. And so to have them on and just talk about the challenges of this, we're in this together. Regardless if we're listening in Duluth or Fargo or Water, wherever we are in the listening audience, I think we all have a pretty shared experience about the difficulties in parenting.
That's just a universal human trait, is to be afraid of not being able to raise your child the right way. I mean, it's a great thing to hear. Even though I'm completely hopeless, I'm never even going to be able to get married, let alone have kids. I'm way out of that. But it's incredibly inspirational to hear that there are other people who are struggling with this. And even as someone who's not involved in raising kids, I can help mentor in good ways other people's children who need good role models.
Yeah, the importance of having multiple voices in our kids' lives. Well, we're going to be talking with them in 2 weeks about dating and all that. So, Logan, you have to stay tuned for that one. Let's take a break for news, and we'll come back with David Aikman with Foreign Affairs.
It's easy to love someone when they agree with you, and difficult when they don't. Hi, I'm Mark Grayston with Parenting Today's Teens. Remember those days when your toddler or grade school kid wanted to please you? But then something happened. That cute kid became a jumbled up, disagreeable, emotional mess. And all of a sudden, it isn't so easy to love them anymore. If you have a teen or preteen living in your home, I want to remind you that no matter how bad things get, your child needs unconditional love. When it's easy and when it's not. If your child feels there's something they could do to lose your love, be very clear right now about how you love her or him without condition.
Mark Grayston is devoted to helping parents of struggling teens. Find his small group curricula online at parentingtodaysteens.org. That's parentingtodaysteens.org.
My name is Bond, James Bond.
Oh, I just love that. That means that one of our favorites here, Dr. David Aikman, who is our foreign affairs correspondent to talk us through global headlines, is going to be joining us. Good morning, David. We have Dr. Aikman? Sounds like we have a little bit of a connection problem this morning. So, well, we've got a lot of headlines to get into. I hope we can find Dr. Aikman at this point. We'll try one more time. Good morning. So, Logan, why don't we, while we get Dr. Aikman back on the line here, obviously he's coming to us from overseas. We can't expect to have satellite phones make good connections, you know, when we're getting calls from Ireland. But one of the headlines that we want to get into right away with him was some pretty troubling news. I don't think I understand exactly what's going on, but there was a nerve agent released in the UK that killed a homeless woman. And I think Dr. Aikman is back on the line. Can you hear us now?
I can indeed. Yes, it's fine.
Perfect. Well, it's great to hear your voice, and we have so many headlines to get into this morning. I don't even hardly know where to begin, but maybe you heard me reference just now that there's a story coming out of England of this homeless woman who was killed by a nerve agent that maybe was left over from some sort of assassination attack a few months ago on a British double agent. I don't understand what's going on, Dr. Aikman. This is right out of a movie. Walk us through the details.
It really is. Well, a few months ago, there was an attempt to poison a former British double agent who had originally been with the Soviet intelligence and later the Russian intelligence military agency called the GRU, because what they found smeared on the door handle of the house he was living in Salisbury, England, was a nerve agent developed by the Soviets called Novichok. Now, miraculously, both he and his daughter, who were found looking very sick indeed in a Salisbury park, they miraculously recovered.
but nobody ever put their finger on who had deposited this targeted poison on the door handle. And the instant supposition was that the Russian intelligence authorities were taking revenge on somebody who betrayed them, which, of course, he had by working for the British. But they never found out who had done it or who was suspicious. And all of a sudden, we have this situation where an unmarried couple, they use this term partner, Dawn Sturgis and her partner, another English fellow, probably about 40-something years old. They had been strolling through a park in Salisbury and apparently picked up a discarded vial or a container that had the nerve agent, the same nerve agent that was used to attack the Skripals. So the supposition is that this discarded nerve agent had originally been used to try to poison the Skripals and simply had been carelessly thrown away in a public location, which is a very, very sinister development. You can imagine how the people of Salisbury are feeling about their public parks these days.
Yeah, I mean, worry in terms of getting exposed, because if they just even brushed across this nerve agent and it caused them to lose their life, I mean, we're talking significant poison here. And I suppose that this may be evidence where they might try to tie this back to Russia in a more substantive way. So I'm guessing diplomatic tensions are on the rise between the UK and Russia.
Well, they are. But at this point, Theresa May, the British Prime Minister, has not pointed a finger specifically at the Russians again. I mean, the inference is that because this is the same nerve agent used against the Skripals, whoever deployed it against the Skripals had carelessly discarded it in a place where it could cause harm to somebody else. And that's a very frightening development.
Mm. Well, and other news happening in your neck of the woods in the UK as well is the resignation of David Davis, who was the Brexit minister, the one that was in charge of helping to oversee the UK's removal from the European Union. And that's causing some shock effects here as well, right?
Well, it really is. It's a most peculiar thing because Theresa May, the Prime Minister, organized a cabinet outing to the country home of British Prime Ministers called Chequers, where Winston Churchill used to have his meetings before and during the war. And this meeting was supposed to bring everybody into line, those in the government who favored a hard approach to the EU, and those who often included supporters of the Remain campaign, who wanted to have a very smooth and calm exit from the EU. This was supposed to bring everybody under the same friendly umbrella and lead to a meeting that would actually then result in the British government proposing a final deal to Mr. Barnier of the EU, the European Commission, who's overseeing the negotiations. And that was supposed to bring everything in line. Well, it turns out that there was far more friction at the meeting than anybody had anticipated, or at least had anticipated once the meeting was over. And although Theresa May got agreement from the cabinet to support her at the end of the retreat at Chequers, it turns out that David Davis, who has been an ardent campaigner for a Brexit that favors the conditions of the British, he was so disillusioned by what emerged from the meeting that he abruptly resigned, along with two lower-level ministers in the government. That's led to questions about how much in control or how able Theresa May is to continue as Prime Minister with a cabinet that basically doesn't seem to trust her.
Hmm. We have just a minute before a break. Are the implications that maybe Brexit is not going to happen, or is it still full speed ahead at this point?
No, I don't think there's any suggestion at this point that there will be a vote against Brexit, because that was decided in a nationwide referendum and nobody wants to overturn that. Well, I won't say nobody. The ardent Remainers would like to, but I don't think that's constitutionally plausible at all.
Talking with David Aikman, who is our foreign affairs correspondent here on Faith Radio Mornings. And David, we'll take a short break, and when we come back, what I would love to hear is your take on the Chinese exporting missionaries out of their country, which is causing quite a bit of friction, obviously, in the government there. It's Faith Radio Mornings. Stay with us. We'll be back with Dr. David Aikman in just a moment. It is 11 minutes before the top of the hour, and we are joined on the line by Dr. David Aikman, who helps us walk through some of the headlines globally going on. And Dr. Aikman, you sent me one that really caught my attention, which is that we hear so much of the difficulty and persecution of Christians happening in China, and yet some of the Chinese construction companies are going into Africa and building churches. What's happening here with this sort of the persecution but the development of churches globally? Talk us through this.
Well, the Chinese church, basically the house churches, has long had a conviction that they were the final link of a chain going back to the expansion of the gospel from Jerusalem in the first century. And they've got a movement going called Back to Jerusalem. And they think that it's Chinese Christians who are going to bring the gospel to so many unreached people groups literally between China and Jerusalem. So if you look at the map, you've got the Hindus of India, you've got the Buddhists of Southeast Asia, and of course, you've got the Muslims in the Arab countries in the Middle East. And the Chinese Christians have long been convinced that they are the best people to do this because they're used to conditions where evangelizing is difficult or restricted or impossible. And they're not frightened of being arrested. And they're willing to take risks, to take the gospel to places where ordinary conventional missionaries might not be willing to do. And of course, two of their number were killed by the ISIS group in Pakistan. And the Chinese government got very sort of haughty about that, saying, oh, these Christians shouldn't be doing illegal things by taking the gospel overseas. But in fact, China's own very heavy-handed program of One Belt, One Road, which is to extend Chinese economic and political influence all the way across Asia back to Europe, has brought conditions where ordinary Chinese, which of course include Christians, have been hired to work for companies doing exactly what the Chinese government wants to do. So the Chinese government has inadvertently supported the Back to Jerusalem movement of the Chinese house churches.
And are some of the Chinese missionaries, have you seen anything where they're actually interacting with some of the Western missionaries as well, and there gets to be a bit of unity between the West and the East in this situation?
Well, definitely. I mean, there are many American missionary groups that have gone to Beijing and other Chinese cities and share their experience of working among Muslims, for example, and they're giving advice on some of the conditions of missionary work, of church organization, and other useful stuff. And definitely Western missionaries are very much in favor of what the Chinese are doing as Christians outside of China.
And in terms of some of the other headlines, not just in China, but another obviously global power that's in the headlines is Russia. And for us here in the States, I know that our president is meeting with Putin here in this big summit coming up. What are you looking for that would come out of the summit and their conversations?
Well, you know, that's a very good question, Peter, because people have, particularly CNN, have portrayed Putin as this sort of Svengali genius of foreign affairs who puts to shame all the other actors on the international scene. by showing himself so much more intelligent and influential. But we don't know how Putin and Trump will isolate the problems that each thinks really makes it very difficult for his country to live with the other one. So I don't even predict what's going to happen. But what I do predict is that Trump is not going to be one-upped by Putin. Mm. I think it's going to be a very interesting meeting of two very different minds, each trained in different skills, but very competent at dealing with opponents.
Mm. Just a couple minutes left. And so coming out of this conversation, obviously it's been interesting here in the States to follow where Trump seems to be alienating some of the historical allies of the West in Europe and places like Canada, and yet is meeting with leaders in Russia and North Korea. Is it getting framed the right way, or is this just part of diplomacy that really we've needed to enter into as a country for quite some time but have avoided it?
Well, it depends how you approach Trump. I mean, a lot of Christians, particularly foreign policy analysts, think that Trump is God's sort of wrecking ball for the mess that is not only national, the national situation in the United States, but international developments around the world. So Trump is extremely unpredictable, and because of his unpredictability, he's able to do things like draw in North Korea's leader, Kim Jong-un, to an agreement that may eventually defuse the nuclear threat of nuclear weapons in the Korean Peninsula. If Trump succeeds in that, I think it will be a demonstration of his ability to keep people guessing about his motivations and his tactics in a way that is a great advantage to the United States and I think ultimately peace in the world.
Mm. It's Dr. David Aikman. Before we run, David, I'd just be curious. I know you're in Ireland, but some of the events in the World Cup this weekend with England making it through, exercising the demons of the shootout past. Is the country prepared to melt down if they win this entire World Cup?
That's a very good question. I mean, the British players, I think, have demonstrated, and especially the manager, a very impressive modesty, and they're not sort of screaming, oh, well, you've got the World Cup within reach. But they have collectively, that is the soccer team, has collectively improved with every single game. And I think they are probably now at their most confident point in the whole tournament. So it's very interesting. If they beat Croatia on Tuesday, they'll be in for the finals, and that would be an extraordinary achievement.
Mm-hmm. Great stuff. Thanks, as always, for joining us each week, Dr. Aikman, to talk through the headlines globally. We really appreciate and respect your insight onto this. It just helps us navigate this.
Thank you very much, Peter. I enjoyed it, too.
We'll take a short break and wrap up our show. Great show today on Faith Radio Mornings. We'll take one last look at the news. We've had the breaking news all morning about the Thailand cave situation. Paul, what's the latest?
Yeah, I've been keeping an eye on Reuters. They've been doing the best reporting, or at least the quickest reporting, and they said a witness says an eighth child has come out, one of the boys. So that means four more boys plus the coach still in the cave. Keep him in prayer.
Yeah, Logan, it's been an inspiring story for sure, just to watch people come around in other-centered ways just try to help out these boys.
And what I really want to see, it's timely. They're soccer players. If FIFA put them in the World Cup, them, the Navy SEALs, the divers, everyone just said, thank you for your incredible work in this. I think that'd be really cool.
It could be just an amazing. I did see some of those headlines this weekend that there's hopefully an invitation for the entire group that's been involved to the World Cup. So hopefully we see him there in this week ahead. Hey, great morning. Thanks for listening again to Faith Radio Mornings. We'll catch you tomorrow morning. And remember that the tomb is empty.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.